This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ho, 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 hello, and welcome back to Bah Humbug, the Christmas movies podcast that recommends at least 100 lights per foot of tree height, but only if they are cinema-sized floodlights. I'm your host, Helen O'Hara, and today I'm tackling one of the darkest, most twisted, and funniest Christmas films of the year. Yes, I'm going to be talking about Silent Night, which is not, as you might expect, a sweet little film about some people in a stable, but a pre-apocalyptic social satire from debutante writer-director Camille Griffin and producer Matthew Vaughn. So this film is set in a very nice house where some awfully nice middle-class types, old university friends, have gathered for a lovely, lovely Christmas. Keira Knightley and Matthew Good play our hosts, and they've invited characters played by the likes of Lucy Punch, Annabelle Wallace, Chope Dorisu, Lily Rose Depp, and Rufus Jones. Knightley's Nell is keen to make everything perfect for Christmas, as so many people are. But there is a twist in this tale, because this entire gang are facing a world of environmental catastrophe and the imminent arrival of a face-melting cloud of pollution, like goo, basically. And this is their last hurrah before swallowing their government-provided suicide pills and bidding farewell to it all. Only young Art, who's played by Jojo Rabbit's Roman Griffin Davis, and who is also, by the way, the director's son, is willing to point out how completely mad this all is. But, you know, you can't let the mere end of the world get in the way of a good Christmas shindig. So, I was delighted recently to speak to Camille Griffin about her film, to learn more about the challenges of getting it made, and why comedy was the only way to go. Here's Camille. Camille, welcome to Bah Humbug, and congratulations on, I think, a very unusual Christmas movie.
Thank you. I'm just ashamed at my attire, but we won't have to talk about that right now.
It looks very Christmassy from here. You've got plaid, so that's as far as I'm concerned. So, look, first question. I mean, this is a sort of pre-apocalyptic drama. I mean, would you describe it as a Christmas film yourself?
I don't know. I mean, it's obviously a Christmas film because it's set at Christmas, but no. I mean, yes, I do. When people say, what is the film? I say, oh, it's a dark comedy, you know, set at Christmas. But I don't know if you can call it a Christmas movie, no.
Yeah, it's not your average Christmas movie, no. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think set more films at Christmas. It's a great time to set a movie at Christmas.
Yeah, because everything's kind of heightened, right? All the kind of emotions kind of come to the fore.
Exactly. You get that instantly. I have to explain that sometimes, but I don't know why I have to explain it. It's obvious, I think, but yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about the inspiration for this. This was sparked by a conversation with your sons, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, I think I did my first TV radio interview the other day, and I was quite honest, but I think it's a good thing. But all my material I've ever written is kind of challenging the dysfunction of the middle classes. Mm. So I suppose, obviously, then I have to say to myself, well, how dysfunctional am I? Well, obviously, I am pretty dysfunctional, but I have a real issue with my class system that I grew up in. You can probably tell I sound kind of posh, but I was kind of actually an outsider in a way to the classism, but I did inherit this accent. Mm. So I always wanted to kind of challenge the privileged class and their value system and how they react under extreme circumstances and what makes them tick and things like that. And then this particular idea, I think, happened. I was trying to find something to write that I could make for very little money in one location. And because I decided to not go back to the film industry to ask for Fungi again, because they wouldn't give me any money. And for years, they wouldn't give me any money. And it was just my last attempt. Anyway, I was chatting to the kids and they'd just seen War Horse. And they said, oh, what would we do if there's a war? And I was like, oh, blimey, well, that's a very serious thing. And I remember being very little and watching a film called Where the Wind Blows. Did you ever see that film?
Oh, God, yeah. I'm still scarred.
Yeah, the Roman Briggs film. And I watched it accidentally thinking it was a cartoon, you know.
Yeah, because, yeah, that's what it looked like. It looked cute.
What it looked like. And I remember, I mean, very, very young and finding out about nuclear war and thinking, oh, we're all going to die. Like, my world had ended. I was terrified. So I was careful with them. I said, well, it's not really going to be like guns and the horses and, you know, it's going to be really big bombs. And I said, and it's going to be dreadful. So we're either going to have to go into the forest and, you know, arm ourselves or end up eating each other and it'll be dreadful. And or we could have a nice dinner, lie down and take my tramadol I've been saving up over the years. It was a joke. Clearly, I was joking.
Yeah.
The kids were like, we wouldn't take your bloody tramadol. and I was like, oh, my God, that's what we should make the film about. So, I mean, I my head's full of dark, crazy ideas, but it wasn't supposed to be serious. It wasn't supposed to be. And this film wasn't supposed to land in a pandemic. I wrote this before we even knew of a pandemic. In fact, I wrote it was a virus. And then my then agent said, oh, that doesn't make sense. So we changed it to environmental.
Yeah. It's amazing timing because it feels very of the moment in a very strange way. You know, just these people in their little bubble, like all of us have been over the past year or so, and sort of facing some big crisis. It feels all too relatable.
Yeah, I know. I'm sad. That makes me a bit, I mean, obviously I'm sad. I mean, I'm sad. Obviously, we're all sad about what's happened and the amount of people have had to suffer over the last 2 years. But of course, I had no intention to traumatize an already traumatized audience, but I obviously did have an intention to traumatize an untraumatized audience. That is true. But I think it's still helpful. I think it's helpful to have these conversations. That's important for me, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just in terms of having these conversations, I mean, casting your own kids in this, I think, is one way to kind of control that a little bit, I guess, because you're having incredibly difficult conversations with any young actor you put in this film. And maybe that way you have a little bit more support network for them, I guess. I know.
Yes, you're right.
All kids obviously have a chaperone. Yeah, even so.
Yeah. You automatically understand that, I think. You automatically go, okay, well, it's not just a form of nepotism. I mean, first off, I cast them because, like I said, I thought I was going to make this film for no money. And I was like, okay, what do I have around me?
You have the star of Jojo Rabbit in the house. Yeah, come on.
That was useful. And then, but he hadn't always been the star of Jojo Rabbit. I mean, he spent 2 years trying to become an actor. Not because we wanted him to. He kind of nagged us to. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But that was useful. And then I did. We met kids for Kitty. And the twins had to audition. In fact, they all did a little audition around the kitchen table. But we met girls and met some really sweet, wonderful, delightful kids. But I thought to myself, I can't bring them on set. It's going to be chaos. We've got like 10 actors and a crew and busy schedule. I said, that character Kitty gets treated like shit. This is like, you know, we can't subject a child. So actually, Davida is Thomas and Mackenzie's little sister. I didn't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
And they become friends and Jojo. It just made sense. And her family were close. We were all close. And her parents came to set every day. I just knew there had to be a certain level of safety within this chaotic and potentially traumatizing environment. I said to Roman in the car, I was like, are you remotely traumatized from Sal and I? He went, ridiculous. He was like, what are you talking about? Well, we had a laugh. I mean, it's awful, but we had a lot of fun making the film.
That's something I hear from people a lot, that, you know, dramas tend to be more fun to make than comedies. Comedies are very serious business a lot of the time, and whereas dramas seem to just, everyone needs that release.
Yeah, I don't know why any set needs to be unpleasant. I mean, I think it's such a privilege making a film. It's so fun. And because I've been a member of the camera department for years, I knew very early on when I started working the film show, I thought, don't waste people's time, you know. These people just want to get home and see their families or not, or watch EastEnders or do their washing, or don't be a director that doesn't know what they want or just waste people's time. I don't know why any set should be unpleasant. But we did have a good time, yeah. Obviously, then the pandemic kicked in. It wasn't as
less fun.
We'll say we were laughing our way through the pandemic. That doesn't sound right, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. So when did you actually shoot this? Was this sort of just pre-pandemic? Was that?
Yeah, well, we were supposed to have a four-week shoot. We started shooting in February. We were supposed to have a 2020. We were supposed to have a four-week shoot. And we wrapped a few days early because we were going into national lockdown on the Monday. So we wrapped on the Wednesday.
Right.
So it was progressing slowly and then getting quite serious and then very serious.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah.
And then, yeah, very similar. Terrifying. Very similar to the giant cloud hanging over the film itself. I mean, tell me about your cast, though, because you've got this incredible, incredible lineup of people. Was Kira the first kind of piece of the puzzle? Was that how you came together?
She is.
That's amazing.
I adore her for that. I mean, I do anyway. I've got a bit of a, I wouldn't say girl crush, because I'd like to say we were friends, but she is a kind of remarkable human being, actually. She was the Matthew Vaughan was the first person on board. He's really the person who changed my life. And he said, who do you want to be in this movie? I said, well, it's got to be Keira Knightley, hasn't it? I mean, it's got to be Keira. And he went, oh, that's hilarious. He went, oh, yeah, good idea. You know, this was very early stages. We were just chatting. Anyway, then it was the summer holidays and we didn't speak for maybe, I don't know, a month and a half. And I came back to him and I had a terrible ear infection. He went, oh, Keira Knightley's read The Switch Wants to Talk to You. And I said, but I'm on morphine in hospital. I can't talk to her. But I was like, what? No. I think I knew before that. I was like, that's amazing. And we had this talk arranged, this chat arranged. Then I got this ear infection from the holiday and I literally was in the hospital. I had to get say to the nurses, could you undo me so I can go next door? I've got to talk to Keira Knightley. she said, I said to her, I hope you don't mind, but I might sound a little bit droggy, but I'm on morphine. But anyway, she thought that was funny. But she was amazing because it was quite a brave thing for her.
Yeah.
So as soon as she said she was interested, I was like, God, this was super cool. Because I know that the material was tricky and it was like unusual. Anyway, she came. She said, I really like it. And so we were like, wow. I mean, it was amazing. So basically everyone, it all started with Kira. And then slowly, one by one, we found the right people. I think Annabelle was one of the first people we cast. Mm-hmm. I think Lucy Punch was one of the last people we cast with Kirby. Wow.
Yeah.
We met some extraordinary actresses for that book, but I wrote that line, the really inappropriate, intendedly inappropriate line about the burqa, and no one could get the line right. And we were thinking, it's interesting, all the actors can't get this one line right, I thought, okay, it must be my writing, I need to cut that line. And then we got a tape from Lucy one week, and I heard that she said the line, and she got it right, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. She was amazing. She really was what I'd written, and unfortunately that was just had to be. I was very lucky. Somehow the right people found us, and we found the right people.
Yeah, it's just an amazing lineup, like Chopé de Rizzo as well, and Kirby and Lily and Matthew, of course. Like a great lineup of people. I mean, you know, this is your first feature. Are you spoiled basically from here on out?
Really spoiled. Really spoiled, and also for very. I'm also. Sadly, kind of get attached to things and quite sentimental. So I'm going to probably just harass them for the rest of their life. Not harass them, but like, oh, you know, you helped me so much. But no, they're extraordinary actors. I mean, actually, what was amazing being on set with this thing in my head going, don't waste time. Don't do things you don't need. But they would just kept giving and they can. And then I was like, wow. And now they can do this. In my head, I was like, wow, they can do. So I was like, wait, let's try this now. They were just extraordinary. It was like opening a giant gadget that could just have multi-talented tasking. I don't know. They were extraordinary. Very clever and talented actors.
Hello, I'm Kate Lever, host of Who's a Good Dog? The podcast for anyone who's ever loved a dog. We're one of the other podcasts in the Stripped Media family. Each episode, I ask a brilliant person to introduce me to their dog and tell me how having a dog has changed their life. Listen to Who's a Good Dog wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I wanted to ask you as well about like choosing particularly to set it at Christmas, because I think it works brilliantly because you have already this pressure that a lot of people feel to make Christmas perfect. Mm. And you have that turned up to the absolute maximum because it's the last Christmas. It's the only Christmas. And just the insane kind of fizzing tension of that in the background, particularly for Keira Knightley's Nell, I just thought that was a brilliant, brilliant way to do it. Was that one of the big reasons for setting it when you did?
Well, I think, Helen, I'm just going to say, we're very like-minded, because you're the only person actually I've spoken to, quite a few people recently, who understands that we're all dialed up at Christmas, that we're supposed to be our best selves. At Christmas is the time where we go into our deepest form of sentimentality, and like, who's that person I haven't called and who I haven't spoken to? So, yeah. I think really I wanted to parody the middle class, the middle upper classes. And then unconsciously, as I started writing, I realized I was parodying the working title genre. And then Keira lent us from that working title genre perfectly. And then it all made sense. So I didn't sit down and take all the bits of the puzzle and go, I have to do this, 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 and this. But it just all seemed to make sense. And poor character. Nell's got to keep it all together.
Yeah.
You know, she's the perfect kind of version of neutral. Like, it's amazing because when I see the film, I think she has so much love for her characters. She's more able to look, she's like the perfect grandmother. You know, grandparents love their grandkids, but they were terrible parents, right? She's like, she's the perfect friend, but she struggles harder with the kids, you know, even though she's a wonderful mother. She's good. She's got both good and bad and dysfunction. And so I think, yeah, that's interesting.
Absolutely. And I love the different reactions across the whole spectrum. You've got the sort of, let's not talk about it, thank you, stop talking from Matthew Good, you know,
yeah.
That kind of desperation to not let anything get too deep or too deep.
Yes. I've had that my whole life. I've been told to shut up my whole life. So I don't know how you feel, but that's a theme of my life. Oh God, here she goes. Oh God.
And what about getting that tone right in the film? Because it is really funny, but it's also really dark at times, you know. Is that something that took a lot of draft? So like, how long have you had this sort of bubbling away?
No, it didn't take long. There were lots of things that were hard, but I wouldn't say, I mean, obviously it's hard in the edit because you don't always have control of your film, you know. And obviously I was working with some really established filmmakers, Matthew and Trudy and our editors. So you can't always control what you believe in. And as a first-time filmmaker, I didn't have the status to go, I know that's going to work. But I didn't have any issue with the tone. Because I think, I mean, what was interesting is that, like I said, Roman had been in Jojo Rabbit. And I remember sitting on Tyker's set and thinking, oh my God, wow, I've got it. I get it. He uses comedy. That's hilarious. You can talk about Nazis, you can talk about anything if you use comedy. So that really was thanks to him, the inspiration for comedy, because all my other materials have been really miserable. Can you imagine that material without the comedy? Which is probably why my films weren't getting made. No, I haven't killed any kids before then. but oh dear. Anyway, you can see I'm laughing at that. That is my tone. So anyway, I think I came home and started writing. It was quite a quick thing to write. But the tone I didn't find difficult because I think life is so ludicrous, mm-hmm. and we all are exceptionally brilliant and also exceptionally selfish. We all can be, you know, I was reading again today about people in Europe's got the highest rate of COVID at the moment. And it's so sad. It's like, what are people? Ugh. Anyway, for me, life, you have to find the comedy and the hope and the darkness. Otherwise, we've all had it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people have funerals, hard. Right? People laugh at funerals, so, you know, it kind of seems correct. I have to ask about the Bublé song. So you have a Michael Bublé song, Christmas Sweater, on this film. And I was sort of sitting thinking, oh, I don't remember this from the album. I mean, I'm sure it's on the album. It sounds exactly like, you know, a Michael Bublé Christmas song. But this is a special new song for the film.
Yes. Well, we made the film. I can't remember what point, but Matthew said, oh, Lord, what do you think of this? And he sent me over this song. That he was tinkling on the piano, and because Matthew's got multi-talents, And I went, oh, as you do, politely, you go, oh, yeah, it's great. Thinking, what is this ghastly crap I'm listening to? And then he, I thought, you know, yeah, it's got charm. It's got charm. You know, it's got a, anyway, I didn't think anything of it. And then a few months later, hey, listen to this, Cammy. I was like, is that Gary Barlow singing your song? He went, yeah. I went, oh, okay. He said, I think we should put it in the movie. And I was like, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, interesting. He went, who do you want to sing? I said, well, it's got to be, you know, Michael Bublé. He's Mr. Christmas, right? So Matthew wrote this song with Gary Barlow, Lorne, the composer. Lorne kept that very quiet. Didn't admit to that till later in the story, in our journey. They brought Bublé on. Jane Goldman wrote the lyrics. And they generously gave us the song to put in our movie. What can I say? I'm being very cheeky now. No, he did give us the song. With that opening scene where they're all driving, that was a pickup later.
Wow, okay.
And then I said, if we're going to have this song in the film, you're going to have to please at least let me take the piss out of it, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which thankfully he did, because if he hadn't, that would have been worse, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it works brilliantly, just to, as a counterpoint to everything else that's going on.
Yeah. We're all going to be singing that, you know, though, soon. When you're least expected, you go, I'm singing that Christmas song, because I do. It's in my head now. It's actually very clever, yeah. Even though, forgive me for what I've just said.
No, but it does work, but it's a complete counterpoint. Yeah. So look, there's a couple of questions I ask everybody on this podcast, because obviously it is about Christmas movies. So what are your favorites? Is there something that you watch every year, or do you avoid Christmas movies like the plague?
Yeah. I love Christmas. I haven't seen Elf. Apparently that's one of the best Christmas films ever made.
It's wonderful. Yeah. You've got to see it.
I mean, I loved when I was a kid. Well, when I was a kid, when the kids were younger, I loved Home Alone. But of course, It's a Wonderful Life is amazing. But I did show them Die Hard last year, because I think that's incredible. And I love Gremlins. I mean, I do love Gremlins.
Yeah.
I do love Gremlins. Gremlins is a good reference, I think, because there's this, you know, the gremlin, the blender, and then it's Christmas. Yeah, when I think of Christmas, I just think of New York and that amazing toy shop, and yeah, mm-hmm. I think really not very interesting choices. I'm so sorry.
No, they're classics for a reason, quite frankly. So, but you'd really have to see Elf, especially if you're like a New York Christmas. Like it's pretty.
But let me ask you a question, Helen, because I've heard so much when I go online and I look up the film, which I shouldn't do, and obviously, and I'm going to stop doing. I'll stop you right now. Silent Night, Deadly Night is a film that people have talked about, this cult classic. Have you seen it? It looks terrifying.
I saw it years ago and I haven't gone back to it, I'll be honest. It's scary, as I remember. It was scary. But
people are obsessed with it. They're still watching it now. They're obsessed with it.
You know, I am actually, I'm doing a spoiler, another episode of this podcast is going to be about a horror movie that's out this year called The Advent Calendar, where apparently something bad happens every day. So I've got a horror expert lined up to talk about that.
That's hilarious. That sounds hilarious.
But there is a tradition of Christmas horror movies. So, you know, you kind of fit into that, I think, to an extent.
Yeah, I've got to the age of 47 and never knew that this was a thing, you know. What's wrong with me?
Yeah, Gremlins is your kind of entry into that world.
Yeah,
and then it goes
Silent Night, Deadly Night. Yeah,
Silent Night, Deadly Night. You should also check out Rare Exports, which is, I think, Finnish film where Santa is the monster, basically.
Oh, amazing! Well, that makes sense. He's scary.
Yeah,
fantastic. Okay, did you watch it? Was that your last question? I can't remember.
I've got one more, which is simply this: Christmas traditions in your house. Do you have anything in particular that that you do that other people don't?
We do. We do have a tradition. Mm-hmm. But that's probably because I was brought up Catholic. My mother's French. See, my mother's French. She was French. She's still French. What am I talking about? As a child, we would go to, we would be allowed to, we'd celebrate Christmas on Christmas Eve. So you have your Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. It's nothing different that we do in our house, but I suppose it's different from the British. Yeah. We'd go, and if we went to church at midnight, if we went to midnight mass, we could have our presents afterwards. So I tried to introduce that into my family growing up, but Ben was like, nah, we're not doing that. We're not going to church on Christmas Eve, sorry. But there is something I quite like about that.
Yeah.
But no.
Middle of the night kind of presence.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, no.
No, that's
fine. We fight over the tree. I don't know if that's unusual. I don't think
in terms of when to put it up?
No, how to put it up. Who gets to deck? I give the kids this side of the tree each.
Right, okay.
Because there's three of them. as you realise. Otherwise, their edit is hell. It's chaos.
So what, they've got a quadrant each that they're
developed. Yeah, and I give them each the same one. I go, you go to your side now. And then they all fight. Yes.
That's amazing. Honestly, I think that might be a very good coping mechanism for a lot of families out there listening. So I think that's probably a good thing. But listen, thanks so much for joining us. And yeah, nice, congratulations on the film. It is not what I expected, but I was just amazed by it. I was really, really impressed. So,
I'm very grateful. Thank you so much.
I will be recommending it with caveats that it's not the cheeriest of Christmas films. No,
not the cheeriest of Christmas films. Yes, exactly. Thanks for supporting the film.
Well, that's it for this episode of Bah Humbug. Please join us next time for more Christmas movies madness. In the meantime, I've been your host, Helen O'Hara. This podcast is edited by Ben Williams and produced by Kobe Omanaka for Stripped Media. And if you've enjoyed the pod, please do rate us with 5 shiny Christmas stars wherever you listen to your podcasts. But whatever you do, happy holidays!
Just heard a Stripped Media production.